Good afternoon and welcome to Talk of the Towns. We try to go beyond the headlines to make sense of the issues facing Maine communities, to share what works and to seek alternative solutions. Talk of the Towns is aired on WERU Community Radio since 1993, dedicated to the proposition that everyone benefits when we share our knowledge, our experience, our concerns, and our perspectives. We're about to practice the magic of community radio, in which those of us in our virtual studio and you who are listening create a dialogue we hope will be a benefit to our friends, our neighbors, and colleagues. We are your hosts, Ron Beard and Liz Graves, and we hope you'll stay with us for the next hour and Talk of the Towns. And a reminder that we are recording this show in advance and won't be taking any calls today. Well, this morning, our topic is the Maine Municipal Association and its good work. Maine has 430 towns and 23 cities. Each has some combination of elected officials and staff, some paid, some volunteer. And when they have a question about best practices for local government, they often turn to the Maine Municipal Association, which has been in the business of helping municipalities since 1936, so 90 years. And that gives us a little bit of focus for the show. Liz, I'm going to turn it to you to introduce our wonderful guests.
Yes, thank you, Ron. Hi, everybody. Way Ron said, the Maine Municipal Association is a resource. One tangible form that resource takes is the association's magazine. It used to be called the Maine Townsman and is now called the Maine Town and City, or it's just now called Maine Town and City. And the staff of that magazine has undertaken a look back on what was in the magazine. It's the organization's been around for 90 years, and this year they've looked back, and we thought that would be really fun, and we have gathered some current and former folks involved with the magazine and with Maine Municipal more broadly to talk about that past, present, and future spectrum, and we're super excited. So our guests today are Kate DeFore, the one and only Director of Advocacy and Communications for Maine Municipal, and just a super fun person to hang out with. Mike Starn, who was also in that role, communications for MMA and editor of this magazine for many years, 1975 to 2010, or maybe a couple of other titles in that role, but in that time, but at MMA for all that time. Jill Goldthwaite, who's a former state senator, a former municipal officer, and a longtime friend of MMA. She also wrote a State of Maine column for the Ellsworth American and Mount Desert Islander for many years, 21 years. And Kay Rant, who's former MMA staff. She was the director of state and federal relations for the association from 1977 to 1988. And we're in for a treat. So thank you all for being here. I'll ask you briefly to introduce yourselves. We don't need to get too much into detail on MMA yet. Just as one of the goals of this introduction is to hear your voices and begin to associate voice with name. So Kate, I'll go to you first. What's your deal? Where are you from? And where do you live now?
Well, my name is Kate DeFore. I'm the Director of Advocacy and Communications for the Maine Municipal Association. I grew up in Madawaska, Maine, on the northern border of the state. Many of those experiences have helped me build the career and the weirdo that I am, oddly charming and everything. In one of the introductions you asked us how what drew us to municipal government, and I had no choice but to turn to municipal government. My mother was the town clerk when she was pregnant with me, and it was written in the cards. I did resist. I wanted to be a psychologist. I wanted to go to law school, but I ended up going to the Margaret Chase Smith public administration program. I got my master's there, and you know, it just stuck. I came to MMA in 1995. I'm still here today, and as long as they'll have me, I intend to stay here and continue the work that we've been doing for decades now.
Wonderful. Thank you. Before I turn to Mike, that reminds me of the story that our beloved Alan Baker, former publisher of the Ellsworth American and the Mount Desert Islander, was also a town clerk kid, and tells stories of helping his mom issue dog licenses in Orrington at about 10 or maybe before. So Mike, tell us about yourself, if you would.
Yes, I'm Michael Starn. I go by Mike or Michael. And I come from West Virginia, of all places, and came up to Maine in 1974, and started working at Maine Municipal Association in January of 75. I went to college at Marshall University. No one, for anybody who has some football knowledge of the great, the horrible plane crash that killed all the football players. And I was there at the time. And I studied journalism at Marshall. When I came up to Maine, I worked short time for the Kennebec Journal, covering high school basketball games. And John Salisbury was the executive director of MMA at the time. And I went over and applied for a job helping out Ethel Kelly, who was the first employee of Maine Municipal Association back in 1936. And she needed some help, and I was more than grateful to be able to do that. Now I'm coming to you live from Venice, Florida, it's nice to be able to have a winter place that's warm and a summer place that's on the lake. So I have those two things, and enjoying my retirement years.
Great. So more on John Salisbury and Ethel Kelly later, but first we'll ask Jill to say hello. Hello, Jill.
Hello, Liz. How's everybody this morning? It's wonderful to see some familiar, in fact, all familiar faces. How rare is that anymore? I had to smile when Kate said she was here in 1995, because to me, she's still the new person at MMA. I was elected to the Bar Harbor Town Council initially in 1985. And it was not long before I started hearing about this Maine Municipal thing. And as many people do in Maine, small towns certainly, you get into an elected position because you were curious, maybe, or because somebody said, "We don't have any candidates for three open seats." I was curious about it, and I had lived here at that point for about 7 years, and just felt like I would like to put some more time into something that would be helpful to the community. So I ran for office. I was elected. I heard about MMA and thought that, you know, it might be helpful if I actually knew something about what I was trying to do. And so I became a member of the Legislative Policy Committee. And from that moment on, I cannot imagine serving in office without MMA. They are an enormous resource. They know everything about municipal government, including how hard it can be sometimes and how rewarding it can be. And if there was ever a question about anything, the history, the politics, the how you go about things, the laws about what you can do and what you can't do, MMA knew it all, and they were just a wonderful support system. And I am looking at the very faces that were that kind of personal support for me and so many other municipal officials. I don't know how I could possibly done it, or at least not effectively, without MMA.
Awesome. Thank you. So to Kay, and yes, the question that Kate remembered to answer, like what drew you to local government in the first place? Where does that come from? And where did you grow up?
Well, I grew up in Arista County, just like Kate did, a few hours south of her in Ashland. And it was MMA was my first job out of college in late 1977. So I was just looking for a job, but my degree was in political science, so it made sense that I worked in some level of government. And I still contend to this day that grounding guided me throughout my entire career. Municipal officials aren't insulated from their constituents. Like governors are and United States senators. Between MMA, I worked for MMA for 12 years, but between MMA and my retirement, I worked at the state level for Governor King and at the federal level for Senator King. So I can tell you with some knowledge that municipal officials have the toughest elected office to hold. They go to church and shop in the grocery stores with their constituents and really can't avoid accountability for the decisions they make. So I'm grateful for that grounding. I think it impacted me my entire career and influenced how I conducted myself at both the state and federal level. And now I have the joy of living in this magical place called Bar Harbor, where I'm coming to you from.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So here we go. Kate, would you start, please? Ron gave a little tiny introduction to the work of MMA, but would you give us the slightly broader? There are a handful of sort of areas of focus, and there's so tell us a bit more about MMA current work, and then we'll dive back into history. What does MMA do?
So MMA is a nonpartisan, which is very important, considering that we do advocacy work. And if you ask any member of the legislature, if you ask a Republican, they'll say we are a liberal-leaning organization. You ask a D, and they will suggest to you that we are a conservative organization. So nobody likes us, so it means that we're doing our jobs very, very well. So nonpartisan, nonprofit member organization, we are very proud of the phrase that we work for our members, they don't work for us, because we will often get calls from angry residents asking us to tell the select board or the town manager to do something. And we remind them that we work for them. We provide three different categories of service. And the first are the like member-facing services, which are nearly 100% supported by the dues that our members pay. So of the 484 communities, all but three are members of the association. So we represent municipalities from the smallest to the largest. So with respect to member-facing services, we do legal. We have a legal six-member legal team. They provide guidance to municipal officials. There's no limit on the number of calls you can make to MMA legal or the subjects, provided that they're municipally related. But you have a team that's available to provide guidance and resources. We also have an educational services department, and they work very closely, not only with MMA staff, but our affiliate associations, which are groups of municipal professional employees like clerks and tax collectors and treasurers. And so they are responsible for our educational programs, everything from workshops to webinars to conferences and our signature convention that occurs in October of each year. We also have insurance products that are tailored to municipal needs. And I believe Kay may have been instrumental in the 80s to get the legislation necessary to get pooled insurances. And so we have health insurance products, and, you know, health insurance is health insurance. And what we do a little differently is our support team is in-house. So when you have a problem with a claim, an insurance, health insurance claim, you're talking to somebody at MMA who knows our members. With respect to risk management services, in the 80s, the public market said, we can't do this anymore. We do not want to protect municipalities. You're a different animal. And so with the help of many, many people, we created programs. And the programs today is pretty broad. We cover everything from property and casualty, public officials liability, workers' compensation, and unemployment compensation. And then the third category of services that the association provides are those really important and not often seen, but vital services that support everything that we do. So you're talking HR, IT, building maintenance, and finance. So that's MMA in a nutshell.
Great. Thank you. And then maybe we'll do this next piece together to introduce the look back project. So Before I ask you what sparked it, I'll read one of my favorite tidbits, and then you can maybe share another one as you tell us how this came about. So we've talked actually on this show in the last year about chicken processing in Belfast, for example. And so in the 1956 edition of Maine Town and City, there were entertaining names for the columns for each of the affiliate groups. That the Fire Chiefs Association had a Sparks from Here and There column, or about their work and about what was going on with fire departments. And so the magazine said, quote, the poultry boom, or this is the a paraphrase maybe, but the poultry boom of 1956 introduced new fire safety challenges. And this is just hilarious to me today to think about we have much less of this kind of industrial activity in the state anymore. And very few people smoke cigarettes. But it introduced fire safety challenges. Poultry barns were prone to rapid fire spread due to inadequate fire stops and portioning. Other concerns included barns' distance from improved roads, improper wiring, poor maintenance, careless smoking, and lack of proper exits, all of which posed significant threats to public safety. The other thing I love about that snippet is it ties together all of, like, here's why code enforcement does what it does, all of these hundreds of dedicated public servants around the state, maybe thousands, and fire departments, and how it all works together, because we're really actually just keeping people safe, because it's on us when something goes sideways. So Kate, I know the hour's going quickly already, but where did this idea come from?
Well, MMA is celebrating its 90th anniversary, and we thought, maybe a look back. All we have magazines bound back to 1936. And so I decided to pull them down. And I thought it was going to be a single article with just touching on some of the milestones in each of our anniversary date. But the more you dig into it, the more it becomes fun. And it ended up, some of the stuff that was published was very kind of funny, not at the time, but very funny to me now, because you read about in the municipal clerk's corner, somebody admonishing their colleagues because they refused to issue marriage licenses in a particular way. So it was a really good way of people to share their experiences at a time where you didn't have the internet, you didn't have Zoom meetings. And, there was so much to share that we decided, we're just going to feature the decades throughout leading up to the anniversary in October. And when you think of it, and I'm sure Michael will be able to discuss this, when you think about the changes in technology and, you can edit in, edit an article, using Word, and then I send it to our graphic designer and she works her magic and poof, we have a magazine. I cannot imagine the level of work involved in publishing the magazine in, 36, 56, 76. I mean, just that time and effort. But throughout, leading back to the 90th, I'm going to come back around to the 90th anniversary, the New England Townsman, the Maine Townsman, the Town and City Magazine has been a stable resource for our members throughout our existence. And so it was time to honor it.
All right. I have so many things I want to add, but I want to hear from the guests because you will hear from me enough. So Mike, I'll turn to you. What was a day in the life at MMA like in 1975? And tell us some more about Ethel Kelly and John Salisbury.
75. I was 25. It was an interesting work. Some of my best friends today are friends that I had back then. As I said earlier, I had a journalism degree from Marshall, and I brought journalism into the concept of the Maine Townsman. It was kind of being done with Ethel Kelly at that time, because Ethel didn't have a journalism background. She just got people to contribute. Very few staff people contributed. It was more, she knew people out in the municipal world, and they wrote things like a column for the Maine Town City managers or the clerks or tax collector treasurers. And so that's what it was made up of. I thought it was important to kind of separate the what the Maine Townsman was about in a more journalistically objective way of writing articles that really allowed the other side of the issue to have comments on. And so, just as Kate was saying about nonpartisan, I felt we, even though that was important for us to show that we weren't aligned with any particular party. And so one of the things I did was that I also wanted to bring something that highlighted the people who worked in municipal government. And I still remember to this day, although I've forgotten a lot of things, I remember doing an article and drove all the way out to Stockton Springs to meet with a guy named Walter Trundy, who was 97 years old and was still the town clerk in Stockton Springs. He was, I took my camera and he was kind of animated in the way he talked about things. But I brought back some, there was only one year that he didn't, during that 67 years of being town clerk, that he didn't, because he went, as I recall, he went down to Massachusetts and for something. And he said, that was the last time I ever left Maine. And then he was a real Mainer from, beginning to end. It ended up getting republished in the Congressional Record. I have to say that I probably had more compliments and comments about that article than anything else that I wrote during my 34 years of
work. Mike, I'm going to jump in at the end of that sentence. I apologize and remind listeners who might be just joining us. I'm so sorry to be not having done this yet, that you're listening to WAU Community Radio. And this is Talk of the Towns with Ron Beard and Liz Graves. We're talking today about the Maine Municipal Association and its magazine, now called Maine Town and City. Our guests are Kate DeFour, who's the Advocacy and Communications Director for MMA and the current editor of the magazine, Mike Starn, who's the former person in that role for many years, Jill Goldthwaite, who's a longtime associate of MMA, and Kay Rand, who's former MMA staff. So thank you. Sorry. And so Mike, back to you. That was one big article. What else sticks out to you from the early years?
Well, I think that, just doing all the things that, one, we started out with the staff. When I got there, I think there were less than 20 staff people. It grew by well over 100 by the time I left. And, it was an organization that, had difficulty getting the funding, because we were in a conservative time and we weren't the golden goose was the insurance programs. There was no question about it. When we started those up, every town needed them. And we were able to, market at a very reasonable cost. We weren't trying to take advantage of them, not to say that all insurance companies do that, but it was just something they needed and we filled a void. And it really started back in 1968, the actual first group health insurance program dated back to that time. John Salisbury, who was the executive director, he added in workers' compensation and unemployment compensation. And it really, all of that kind of germinated just as Chris Lockwood was coming on to be the executive director back in 1978. So, you know, it kind of took away from some of the other things that we all did, lobbying, communications, convention, and we, because again, the Golden Goose, that was where the money was. And it really did create the organization that you have today, because so much of that funding comes through the insurance programs.
Great. Well, I'll pick it up and come to Kay Rand. Kay, you were again, the former director of state and federal relations for MMA. Talk about some of your time there. What are some of the highlights and what are the issues that you were helping municipal officials deal with at that time?
Well, I thank Kate for reminding me about the effort to allow Maine to self-insure cities and towns for health insurance. And it was an incredible effort because, as you can suspect, the Bureau of Insurance at the state level was death set against it. So, but with the assistance of Buddy Murray, retired judge now, we were able to make that happen. But, you know, one of the, as Michael said, when I joined MMA in 1977, it was a family. John Salisbury, by the way, is still very much alive and kicking. And I got to MMA just after Governor Longley's term had ended, and Governor Longley hated the Maine Municipal Association. It turned out that our dedication of our new building happened during the gubernatorial campaign, and nobody thought he was a real viable candidate, so he wasn't invited to the dedication, and all the other candidates were. So he never forgave MMA. He never forgave John Salisbury. And it was in fact, he had a press conference when he was governor to demand that his city of Lewiston withdraw from the Maine Municipal Association. That's how much he hated it. And somewhere in the files, Kate, are, I hope they still exist, are letters that he typed on his own typewriter, Governor Longley did to John, just full of venom. I hope they still exist. But one of the other, Liz, Ron, accomplishments that was so hard fought that still sticks out in my mind was increasing the state municipal revenue sharing program. It was always about the burden of the property tax and municipal reliance on that source to fund local government. Increasing the amount of money that state shared with municipalities was a 10-year undertaking. And we finally did it, but then we've taken steps backwards, I think, Kate. But it's still an important program. But I want to just emphasize, too, what Michael said, that MMA was such a family. My best friends, including Michael, are still former colleagues from that time. And it's unfortunate that most of the time that we get together annually at Michael's camp on the lake. But often it's these days it's memorial services, which is really unfortunate, but it was a tight knit group. And I'm again, grateful that that's where I began my career.
So you've mentioned some of the issues that they were folks were dealing with within the state. You've also had a relationship with federal officials. What were some of those issues? What were they like?
Again, it was revenue. There used to be, believe it or not, a program called federal revenue sharing. And fighting to preserve that every year was the primary, and it doesn't exist anymore. In fact, it was when President Reagan who said the federal government didn't have any revenue to share. And we lost that program. But again, it's the federal issues are mostly revolving around resources, too, whether it's the Community Development Block Grant Program or transportation assistance. It really is helping municipalities provide the services that they need to provide without totally relying on the property tax to do it.
And then when you moved to support Governor King and then Senator King, you had that history of working municipalities, and you must have been able to help Governor and then Senator King express some of those concerns and deal with some of those concerns. Again, any memories come to mind around on that transition of, in your role?
Well, again, it always I was responsible for preparing the budget for Governor King, and it was always a top priority of mine that all municipal programs be respected and fully funded. And that was never easy, but became a priority for was my priority, and it was his priority as well. So that's my memory. Municipal issues impact every committee in the legislature. Is somebody that Kate has to deal with, whether it's election law or taxation or insurance programs or you name it. So it cuts a broad swath, policy does. So understanding the impact, how it impacts municipalities, is an important consideration to all of them.
Mm-hmm. Jill, I'm going to turn to you at this point. And you already mentioned that your connection with Maine Municipal Association came when you were elected as a member of the town council in Bar Harbor. Talk a little bit about some of the things that you remember getting from MMA as a relatively new council member. And how did that relationship develop?
Well, there are resources around for people who serve in things like local government, but they're not particularly accessible. The University of Maine used to have a very good program that was kind of the training ground for people who were interested in public service. That's gone now. So people who end up serving in town governments do so because either they have a particular issue, which is not always the best motivator for doing something that's going to involve a lot of other issues, or they just have a desire to contribute something to their community. And that's an easy place to do it, easy in the sense of access, not easy in the sense of performing that job. So when I was first on the council in 1985, I was trying to remember, this may be a fantasy of mine, I don't remember divided reports on things. When we were ready to vote, it was because we had reached a conclusion that we were all comfortable with, or at least could live with. And that's not the case now, for sure. There are a lot of, 5-2, 4-3 votes, and that's not the best way to start off a new initiative in a community. I sympathize with Governor Longley for being written off as a non-viable candidate, presumably because he was an independent. And that was a unique way to serve at that time. I believe I was the first person ever initially elected to the Maine Senate as an independent. There are a few people who have been elected in a party and then dropped their party affiliation at some point. But I don't think anybody was initially elected that way. It happened to be the year that that person named King was running in our state. We talked. We did not know each other before that. We talked. We decided if we're independents, we're not going to get together and be a tiny independent caucus. We were each going to do our own thing. But I must say that when I was elected and the Senate faced the reality of where do I put my coat and how do I make a phone call, because all that comes through the party offices. First, I want to say the parties were very kind and attempted to make provisions for me to have the necessary support system. But our brand new governor also put a wing over me, and I had a corner of the transition office for my first couple of weeks in Augusta. So I had a phone bank and a coffee pot. I had staff, and this was well beyond what anybody else in the Senate had. So I appreciate that from him to this day. One of the biggest issues that we were involved in back in that day was municipal mandates. And we actually passed a constitutional amendment to provide for the state to fund the large share of the cost of municipal mandates. I also want to comment on the fact that when I started serving, there were no cell phones and there were no computers. That made a huge difference. And I was there when we transitioned into having those tools available. I think Peter Mills had the first computer in the state house. It kind of looked like a toilet seat. It was white and aqua, and he was always racing around with that under his arm. And we were kind of like, Peter, what the heck is that? And what do you think you're going to do with it? But we soon found out. One of the big differences it made was normally you respond most thoroughly and quickly to your own constituents. And normally in that day, that was pretty much all you would hear from. But as soon as we had cell phones and computers, you heard from everybody in the state about everything. And it got a lot more complicated to try to keep up with communicating with people. Your constituents in your own district kind of came first, and those people with an interest in your committee work were next. But then it kind of expanded at that point to the entire state, which in some ways was a good thing to get to know those other issues as well. But it was also a huge demand on time because we do not have staff there. There's party staff, but they are, you know, one staff or two, a handful of representatives, for instance. And it was not like Washington, where you've got an office full of staff to do your bidding.
When you became a senator, you took the experience of being a member of the town council in Bar Harbor with you. Did you find that other folks in the legislature needed to have that kind of background, or did you find that background helpful in serving in a state role?
I did find it helpful, and I always felt that you could tell a legislator who had been a select person mm-hmm. or a counselor. So they just had a different understanding and approach to things. And I'm thinking about Rule Cross from Monson and people who just went way back in their communities and knew them extremely well, knew everybody, were related to three quarters of them. And yes, it was a distinct advantage. And you had a sympathy. People, legislators who had not been in municipal office did not have a whole lot of sympathy for the plight of a person who, as Kay said, you know, does half their work in the vegetable department at their local grocery store. And it's a whole different approach. I believe that the closer to the people you are, the better you are as an official. So local government's best, state government's next, federal government, I want to say, out of touch, to be fair.
I want to jump in. We lose Kay in a few minutes. She's got other, well, we all have other commitments this morning, but hers are the earliest. So I wanted to throw it back to you while we have you. What anything else you remember that you think would be instructive? And also, from where you sit now, like what are your hopes? You know, what would you like to see folks focus on or remember or be encouraged by?
You know, Liz, as I was preparing for this interview, I remembered my first column in my first article in the Townsman, Michael. It was on grantsmanship, and I bet you remember. It was
I had
in
to
19.
Edit it so much.
But I remember, I think you remember the issue. I remember the color. It was aqua. But that was my first writing for the Townsman was not always a joy, you know, but an obligation that the entire staff took very seriously, even though it was Michael making the request and often Michael's ideas for articles. But I'm just, you know, Liz, I'm just grateful that the MMA continues to offer the services that they do to local governments. I can't imagine, as Jill said, how local governments would function without MMA. And MMA is able to do that largely because they no longer are just rely on dues from municipalities, but have the revenue from the insurance programs. And that's just been a real the services themselves are vital to municipalities, but the fact that MMA can thrive and continue its advocacy efforts and its legal services efforts and its groups or its educational programs is a legacy that it's good to remember Ethel Kelly. Kelly worked at MMA for a long time while I was there, and she knew everybody, and everybody knew Kelly. And it's great that we recognize a municipal official every year in her memory. So I'm grateful. That's where my career started. I think it served me really well, and I'm grateful that MMA continues to be the asset it is to municipal officials, because as Jill said, I do think local government is the most vital link to the public that we have.
Perfect. Oh my gosh, you sort of sound like seasoned communications professionals. So I will remind listeners, that was Kay Rand, who we're going to lose in a moment. She's the former director of state and federal relations for Maine Municipal Association many years ago. So we're on Talk of the Towns today. We're talking about the Maine Municipal Association and its magazine, The Maine Town and City. So we have Kate DeFour, who's the director of advocacy and communications for MMA, and Mike Starn, who's formerly in that role for many years, and Jill Goldthwaite from Bar Harbor, who is long time municipal leader with many hats, and through that, been connected to MMA for a long time. So something that Kay just said, I had wanted to remind me of something I wanted to pick up on earlier, which is what that technically is called the affiliate groups, which is a bit of a dry term, but is super, super important. And this is another clip from the April edition of the magazine that Kate and her team said. What they chose from the 1956 and 1966 editions were chosen to illustrate the enduring value of belonging to professional associations. And as Mike Met said, this is the Tax Collectors Association and the assessors and the building officials. I'm not even going to get all the names right. But because especially pre-social media and email listservs, but in addition, to share successes and frustration with peers who truly understand the municipal experience. This was my experience when I was a newspaper editor, and it is now as a town clerk, that you are the only one of you in your town. And it is a big job, and it is a public job, and it's a hard job. It's also a fun job, but it is a hard job. So having that peer group, that network of folks to celebrate with and sometimes complain with, just to get it off your chest is really big. Any more about that? Oh, Jill, you sure?
Sorry, I just am compelled to say this. I was at a Maine Municipal annual meeting one year, and there was a meeting for town managers. And I thought it would be an interesting thing to just sit in on and and get a different perspective on that. There was a leader of that. I don't remember his name. At some point in his remarks, he asked a town manager to stand up. And he said, "All right, guys, here's a town manager. You're all town managers. You know what he does. Let's give him a round of applause." And everybody clapped. And the man said, "No. Think about your job. Think about what you go through in a day." Really a big cheer for this guy. Big cheer goes up and everything else. Well, he went through like three iterations but really imagine the nights you spent, the time away from him, and every time. And finally, the whole room was on their feet, screaming and shouting and clapping. And the person who was at the center of all this burst into tears.
Yeah.
It was just extraordinarily moving, because when does anybody ever acknowledge the real cost to serving in our town offices? And it was the most extraordinary thing I've ever witnessed within MMA's walls, and only at MMA would something like that have happened.
That's excellent. And your journalistic instinct, Jill, to get yourself in the room where it happens. I love that. And it reminds me of a similar story. And then we'll decide where to go next. We only have a bit more time, which is the estimable Julie Flynn, who's our Deputy Secretary of State for Elections and long serving, at a training, I think in the fall of 24. So folks were, a little tense. She held up her water bottle at arm's length. I know folks can't see me. And said, "This is a water bottle. How much do you think it weighs?" And of course, being clerks, we all said, well, is it full or is it empty? You're like, I need more information to answer this. But she said, it's not the point. It's not the point. Let me finish my thing. And the point was, no matter how heavy it is, if you hold it for 30 seconds, it's no big deal. If you hold it for 5 minutes, it's really painful. So she told us, and this is the advice to everybody, and similar to that, the managers gathering, that like as early in the evening as you can, put it down, and go home and do something else, play golf or play your banjo, or I don't know what Kate's thing is. I never get to overlap with her at the Liberal Cup, but I hear she goes there sometimes.
Comment. As we're winding down, one of the things that kind of makes me and Kate similar is that we both decided to do, well, she stayed working at MMA, but I left working at MMA, but I went and worked as city manager in Hollowell. And it was important to me to really understand how local government really works, not how we see it from, as I don't know, someone in legislature once said, the ivory tower, where we're looking down at it, but we don't really comprehend the, you know, the difficulties and the ins and outs of that job. And Kate was on the city council in Hollowell. I was the city manager. It was really one of my most learning parts of my career, because it wasn't something that I knew a whole lot. I mean, I knew a lot about it, but I knew about it more from an academic view of it than from a practical view of it. And once I got into, I remember the council, the mayor, I think, was saying, we really need help, as he was, you know, looking to hire me, we need help with a TIF. And because we got this ice arena that wants to have a TIF, and we don't know anything about this.
Mike, for the uninitiated, would you say what a TIF is?
Sure. Tax increment financing. And it was something I had written articles about back in the 1980s. I knew what a TIF was. I knew what some of the issues around a TIF were, but I hadn't really worked directly with the TIF. So anyway, I got that experience. I think, successfully handled that particular TIF. And then we went on to doing a downtown TIF, which was very important, something that we were missing out on. And anyway, I learned a lot from being a city manager. I would not have learned those things had I stayed at MMA.
Great. I want to turn to one of the things we often deal with on Talk of the Towns is encouraging people to get involved in their local government. And certainly we can look back on the good old days when things were simpler. Jill mentioned the idea that you try to form a consensus before you take a vote. But times have changed, and part of that's technology. Some of it's the access to being able to express our views so clearly and simply and blasted all over the world. How does MMA kind of think about encouraging people to run for office, to get involved, to be a volunteer on a town committee? Do you see that kind of emerging as a theme, Kate? And then we'll hear from others as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's plain and simple. It is very difficult work, both for employees and members of councils and select boards. I mean, you're criticized no matter what you do. And I think it takes a special individual to look at municipal government and say, I want to be here. And we should really respect people who say, yep, I'm never going to do anything right, but it's important to me and I want to give back. And I think through the magazine and supporting our members, our, you know, underlying mission of providing our members the tools and resources they need is how we live up to that mission. And I think when it comes to, you know, we're spending a lot of time looking at the next generation of local leaders. We're graying, and we need to, you know, we kind of need to get that type of interest in giving back to your communities. It's not, you know, I grew up in a in a household where if you had skills, you had to share them. It was your requirement to do so. And I think when it comes to municipal government, I think we've talked about it. It's closest to the people, right? You can make effective and meaningful changes every day. You look at the role of the clerk, particularly clerks that are that also issue vital records. I mean, you are engaged in somebody when they're at their best, their happiest, and their worst. I mean, you are issuing birth certificates, you are issuing marriage certificates, and you're issuing death certificates. And so it's the whole aspect of life where you are one person because there's longevity with respect to employees who dedicate their lives to municipal government. You see it all. And so it's that ability to make a difference right away. You might not be told that you did a good job, but you know you're doing something. And I think the last really important element of municipal government is that there is room for everyone. Whatever skill set you have, we can find a role for you at municipal government. You're an accountant, we got a role for you. Your public health, social services, in some larger communities, there's a whole industry available for you. Engineers, you know, the super organized type A types, man, do we have work for you. And so it's, you can make municipal government what you want. It's just get involved.
Great, great. Well, we're reaching the end of a very short hour. We could go on, but we can't. So I'll just ask if each of you, Kate, and then Michael, and then Jill, might have some hopes or aspirations to, as you advise listeners who might want to get involved. What would you say? Kate's expressed it very well, and she may have more to say about that. But what would you say to someone who's pondering the role of local government, especially getting involved? What advice would you say in terms of schooling yourselves, using MMA's resources, and taking the plunge and getting involved? Kate, first to you.
I just go back to there's a role for you. If you're at all interested in what municipal government does, go to your town office, go to your city office, see what the opportunities are. You don't have to run for council or a select board right away. Maybe it's the planning board. Maybe it's the comprehensive planning process. Maybe it's this small volunteer group that's looking at recreational opportunities. So there's plenty of opportunities. Just visit town or city hall.
Great. Michael Starn, as you look back on your work and then want to encourage young people, how do you think you might do that?
Well, I think the first thing I would tell them to do is go over to Maine Municipal Association or onto their website and download this book called Local Government in Maine. We did that back in 79 or somewhere in there. And, you know, I remember feeling when I first started at Maine Municipal Association, I was one of these people that, you know, I knew when I fit somewhere and when I didn't. And I was feeling like I was a fish in water. I mean, it was a place that I felt I belonged. I liked the concept of local government. And when we wrote our book, Local Government in Maine, it started out with saying kind of a byline on the book, a level of government closest to the people. And that's the reason why local government is so important.
Jill, again, thoughts about how to encourage younger folks to get involved, new people to get involved in local government, briefly?
I'm not sure that we have to encourage that because for some reason, people are still willing to do this difficult job. What we have to encourage is the rest of us to behave like decent human beings, cut them some slack, acknowledge that they're doing something in service to their community. And anybody who is even vaguely thinking they might like to try this should know that MMA has your back.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, we've come to the end of that very short hour, our very short hour. Be sure to join us from 4 to 5 on the second Wednesday afternoon of each month for Talk of the Towns. Podcasts of our programs can be found in the archive section of the WERU website. If you have comments or suggestions for new topics, please email us news@weru.org. Our theme music is a medley from Coronach on a Balmain House Highland Music Recording. Thanks again to our guests today, who are or were Kate DeFore, a Director of Advocacy and Communications for MMA and the magazine editor. Michael Starn is the former MMA Communications and Magazine editor. Jill Goldthwait, former state senator, municipal officer, and longtime friend of MMA. And we heard also from Kay Rand, former director of state and federal relations for MMA. Thanks to our underwriters. Thanks to Joel Mann for engineering our program and to College of the Atlantic for production help. Stay tuned for Ralph Nader Radio from 5 to 6 and 2 hours of jazz on Groove Shop from 6 to 8. Liz Graves and I are producers and hosts for Talk of the Towns. This is Ron Beard wishing you a good afternoon.